From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Back after taking a very taking a week off and being very quiet about it, just having a bit of a rest, recharging the batteries. There was a Ozboy Nation thrown in there for a bit too quick after the other one, a couple of days. But oh well, it's bad planning on my part. And John with me for this half of the episode, and no Hunter at the moment, but he will appear halfway through, and John will disappear. Revolving door syndrome. Right. Say hi, John.
Hello.
And the topic for this time around, or is that we've put out on the Facebook page there, is films that don't hold up, and we're going to title this one, You Were Better the First Time Around.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a very suggestive title there. Yeah. anyway,
like a Morrison song.
Yeah. Okay. So now, anyway, John and I were just talking off air, just about things like the Amazon Gold Box deal and that. John, do you have the Amazon page up in front of you at the moment? The homepage.
I can click it right back up.
Please bring it up.
Yes.
All right. Okay. I want you to go down to bestsellers and look at the number one selling item.
Okay. Best-selling items. It's got so many personalized picks here.
No, it's on the right-hand side.
Okay.
All right, so you'll see best-selling compact cameras. Underneath that, we have bestsellers.
I've got movies and TV, running shoes, so it's kind of personalized to me.
Okay, well, on the right-hand side there.
Uh-huh.
The number one selling item is... an Ebola protective kit for $35.99.
Whoa.
Includes a Tyvek suit, eye protection, two surgical masks, two pairs of gloves, booties, duct tape, and a plastic bin for easy storage.
Jeez.
We were just talking about them flights coming in from Sierra Leone and Spain, and just why that dopey president of yours, America.
Hey, it's like Garrow's here.
I was actually fed these words by Garrow. These aren't mine.
No. Just reading off of Garrow's script.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Why are you still letting planes into America with these infected people? Okay, so yeah. Like I said, John's here the first half, and Hunter here later on. Anyway, so... we got a whole bunch of responses about films that didn't hold up for the listeners out there, and we're going to read them off. Let me bring this page up where we had the question asked. There was something that you posed. This is your actual idea.
Right.
So let's get over to the actual post, and being nepotism, I'm going to actually do the email first.
Okay.
Because that was actually from my brother.
He's going to
email one through, and he actually did. So anyway, my brother Jules puts in here, hi all, as Stuart would know, I'm not much of a movie goer, and when I do go to the cinema, it is to see a movie I've been hanging out for, which means I usually end up liking it. Yeah, I know for a fact. He's like that with the Lord of the Rings and, Hobbit movies, etc. Okay, carrying on, once I like a movie, I tend to stick with it, so it was difficult choosing a movie for this particular topic, especially the decade or less. I think he's got that wrong, as in you meant something you've watched in the last decade, right? Not a film in the last decade.
It could really be, like, anything that you saw, and then you took, like, half to 10 years to watch again, and you're like, oh my god, what was I thinking?
Yeah, I think he was thinking that you meant something released in the last 10 years or less. That's not
right.
The case, no. There is one film, though, that has deteriorated over the years, which I would like to out, and that movie is Grease. I totally agree with him there, because we did used to watch Grease quite a bit as kids on VHS. Okay, he puts here specifically, the script is corny, lots of eye-rolling moments with the dialogue, can't disagree there. The songs are nauseating, except the main theme sung by Frankie Valli, cannot disagree there. I think the Trilly's the only standout song on there. All the rest are crap. The characters are irritating. The dance contest scene is unforgivably cringeworthy. Yeah, I'm still with him all the way. And the final one, and nowadays when I look at Danny Zuko's cleft chin, all I see is a ball rest / testicle holder for male masseuses who get blown by Travolta, which I can't disagree with that one either.
He had to go there.
Oh, well, he is a bulk, I guess, you know. He's Australian, you know, no filter. I can't disagree with none of those at all. Dance contest scene, I wouldn't say it's unforgivably cringeworthy. It's got its cringe moments. Irritating characters, yes. Songs I can't stand except for the main theme by Frankie Valli, true. And I definitely agree with the last one about Travolta. What do you reckon, John?
I haven't watched Grease, man, probably in 30 years.
Oh, Jesus, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we get the DVD upstairs because, of course, my wife bought it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have never had a real interest in going back and revisit it. I liked it when I was a kid. I think I saw it when I was six or seven years old. So in the theater, in fact, first run. And I think I watched it on HBO a few times, and that's really all I remember. And the HBO viewings would have been, what, 79, 1980?
Jeez.
And that's probably the last time I watched it.
See, we watched it heaps of time in high school because we had a school teacher who was obsessed with it. He's just like, every time there was a film, we're going to play a film this period. What's that? Oh, Grease. Oh, shit. You have to watch it again.
Right.
Every freaking time it was Grease. So, yeah. Well, yeah, my brother and I made fun about this guy because that's all the only film he ever seemed to watch was bloody Grease. I don't know why. He must have seen himself as a Danny Zuko type to the school teacher that he was banging at the time. All right. So, yeah.
I remember being delightful when I was a kid, but I'm not, you know, back then I'm not of the age to be looking at its any real element. Anything beyond the superficial, which is the music and the look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get on to the other ones. Thanks for that, Jules.
Yep.
Now, what have we got here? Okay, let's see. Scheme is still perplexed about what it is. So, Scheme's still thinking about it. Okay.
Well, he'd have to diss something that he might feel nostalgic for and then suddenly say, you know what, this doesn't hold up. Sometimes it's a tough thing.
Every Shaw Brothers movie out there.
You know, it's funny because none of those have aged bad for me, and probably because I watch them with a certain perspective.
Yeah.
None of them. It's like, oh, I like this more when I was younger. So now they're pretty much what they are. You know.
Did you ever see one called The Magic Blade?
Yeah.
Yeah, you seen it with that Devil Grandma?
Yeah, Devil Grandma. It's a stylized. It's a Chu Yun directed movie. He was actually one of the bigger directors at Shaw's, but his movies. Not many of his films were seen over here on television because they weren't really kung fu movies.
Right.
They were sword films, and they weren't as big on getting the sword films on television as the kung fu.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. So, anyway, Garrow tells us Star Wars is his one. He said he loved it as a kid, but then saw it again when they re-released it in 97 and found it to be a poorly paced bore. Yeah.
I'd pretty much agree with him on that.
Yeah.
I saw the 97 re-release, and I said, wow, this kind of surprised this was a big deal, because it's pretty sluggish.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the extra scenes really did not help that whatsoever.
No.
Those, you know, patched in extra scenes, so...
Yeah, it just kind of bloated it.
Oh, it really did, yeah. So, yeah, I can't disagree with Garrow there at all. I'd like to know what his thoughts are on Empire, and especially Jedi, with the, you know, let's replace, you know, the original Darth Vader and put Hayden Christensen in there in the end scene with the, you know, the ghost of Yoda.
At least wasn't in the 97 re-release.
Wasn't it?
No.
Of course not. Was it later on, wasn't it? That's right. Yes.
Right. I heard he did that to the Blu-ray versions, and I said, well, I was going to get those just for the idea of my kid watching them, but it's like, if you spend something that tacky, I'll wait.
I actually have those Blu-rays. They released them in you know, the big box set, or the two sets of three, with the first three, then the 4 to 6. And I've actually got 4 to 6, but only because they actually came as a freebie with the Blu-ray player that we needed. So, like, the player was like $70, and you know, they're worth at least $50 for that set, so it was like a no-brainer. They do look good on Blu-ray, but not in those versions. Bring back the originals, thanks, Lucas.
Right.
And
I thought Empire held up great when I saw that on a re-release.
Well, there was no bullshit, you know, extra bits in there. Like, there was some, like, you know,
there was like an extra shot of the snow monster, and they redid some of the effects, but that was about it.
But the effects that they redid really enhanced the movie. They didn't deter from the original vision of it all, you know.
Right, right. It wasn't drastically, hey, look at this.
Hey, it was Greedo's going to shoot. Yeah, it's just bullshit. All right, our buddy Sean Haddonfield Hatchett says Phantasm. That is all. So I'm guessing he's watched it just recently. And
I thought he'd watched it for the first time, because he was posting on his own page that he was watching it and was waiting for something to happen, as if he hadn't seen it before.
Oh, okay.
I might be wrong, but
well, you're probably guessing by the topic title that we got, it's something he has seen before and it's not holding up for him.
I imagine he did. I saw it on video in 1986, I think, and I liked it back then as a weird movie, but I've been sitting on a special edition DVD for like almost 10 years now, and have not been in a hurry to revisit it.
Well, I've never seen any of the Phantasm movies, to be honest with you.
Okay.
No sort of real desire to watch them. Just, is that the one with the tall man or something in it?
The tall man and the silver spears, the spike, the forehead, and blood spurts everywhere.
Are they any good?
I think Phantasm 2 was a pretty good movie. I think the last time I watched it was like 10 years ago, and I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. I just haven't revisited the first Phantasm in a long time, and like in 79 it was well liked because it was very strange and different and had a lot of surrealism and elements of science fiction and fantasy, and wasn't like a slasher film. It wasn't like, but it was like one of the, like, it and Dawn of the Dead came out right after Halloween, so it was kind of part of this huge horror boom that happened in 79.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay. Dan Wilson, our buddy Dan the Dead, my brother from another mother over in Queensland there. It says he enjoyed Juno when I saw it at the cinema, watched it on DVD. 6 months later, thought it was a pretentious piece of shit. boy, Juno. That's why we needed Hunter here for this one.
Yeah,
boy. Have you ever seen it?
I saw it in a theater and thought it was okay, but highly overrated. But it's not a film I'd ever rewatch.
Right.
Like, I didn't hate it or anything, but I didn't really love it or like it. I was just like, oh, it's amusing, it's just a few laughs. And, hey, the characters like Suspiria and Fulci. You know, they're talking Argento and Fulci. Okay, that's unique. And then I've never had a desire to watch the movie again. I don't know if that's a real judgment on quality or not.
Yeah, I've just got no desire to see things like that. Okay, let's go down. Dan Taylor. Hello, Dan. Yes. Saw Phantasm at a theatrical screening some years ago and thought it was actually better than I remembered. Some friends thought Phantasm 2 did not hold up, but I do not agree. I'd put American Werewolf in London and The Dark Knight on my list. All right, this is going to be interesting. John, American Werewolf in London, did you ever like it?
I never cared much for it.
Really?
Some impressive stuff in it, like the Rick Baker effects are great, and a few of the scenes are intense, but I never thought it worked as a whole, you know, as a cohesive thing.
See, I still like it. I remember seeing it actually when it came out as a kid. You know, we did a family outing to watch American Werewolf at the theater.
Right.
And I think my parents might have regretted that decision, us being at that age that we were, you know, 9 or 10 and 8 years old or something like that.
Right.
But I watched again the Blu-ray. I picked it up probably 2 years back, and I still thoroughly enjoyed it. Still had a lot of fun with it.
Uh-huh.
But you're rather biased now, because you don't like John Landis.
I had I like some of his films. I love Kentucky Fried Movie.
Yeah.
And I like the Blues Brothers, but I didn't care for the film when I saw it years ago. I just, like, you know, and this is before the Twilight Zone trial, and I was just like, well, it's impressive transformation scenes, but I need a little more. And I find Landis's way of constantly putting Motown music in the scenes gratuitously annoying. Like,
you reckon?
It's just because he likes them so much that I don't think somebody of David Naughton, his character's generation, is going to have that music playing.
No, he'd be listening to his own song he did, right?
Elvis Costello or some shit, whatever was big at the time, you know. The Knack. That's what was big then. It's like, they're not going to be listening to, like, Motown music. And, like, the terrible Beverly Hills Cop 3, the first 10 minutes, there's mechanics who are about to be killed by the villains are dancing to Motown music. It's just this gratuitous set piece in the first 5 minutes. I was like, goddamn Landis and his stupid Motown fetish. It's tiresome.
I've never noticed it.
It's just like, but why is it in this movie all of a sudden for no reason at all? It's just like the director, you know, jerking off. That's all it is.
What do you think Tarantino's made a career out of doing with his friggin' music he sticks in his movies?
It's probably where he got the idea.
Probably is.
It's not all from the same record label from the same year, you know? It's not constantly hearing My Girl by the Temptations. Like, I never want to hear that song again because it's used in so many movies, particularly John Landis movies.
Yeah, okay then. All right, well, thanks to those who have given us submissions so far. Like we said, we will read out the rest later on in this episode when we're joined by Hannah. Okay.
Yeah, so the rest are like younger generation movies for Hunter.
Yes, they are. Yeah. So anyway, John, what did you come up with, ones that just didn't hold up for you?
My main one and what inspired it was last week I watched Dark City, the Alex Proyas movie.
Oh, I never liked that.
It was released in 1998. I remember hearing about it from a friend who actually worked in the industry a year before it was released, and he said, oh, they've got this movie, Dark City. New Line has no idea how to market it, but it's really good, but it baffles them how they're going to release it because they don't know what the market is. And I saw it in the theater and I liked it when I saw it in June of 98, watching the TVD last week. And it is the director's cut I watch, which has additional scenes and kind of, I guess, to flesh out the story a bit. But man, I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
This is like everything that ages really bad about movies from the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's this MTV goth aesthetic, this kind of view of the world with Philip K. Dick metaphors, which is something you get from an art school student. You know, hey, man, what if we're all just in a waking dream? And one of us woke up, bro, and realized we're pawns in a game. You know, it's like kind of this stoner logic that impresses, like, a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
The acting is really... Other than William Hurt, the acting is fairly bad, and I think that's the way they were kind of directed. It's just listless. Like, Rufus Sewell just walks around for the movie confused the whole time. Kiefer Sutherland is doing like a Peter Lorre impression, and it's really hammy and really overdone, and Jennifer Connelly is just kind of there. William Hurt at least plays the cynical cop and kind of does well with that, but the performances are just really flat. Richard O'Brien is in the movie basically playing the controlling puppet master aliens who were basically are like the Cenobites in a Hellraiser movie.
Yeah.
And it's just, I was stunned. Like, I remember being impressed by it in 98 and just watching it last week and thinking, good Lord, what the hell was impressing me about this?
Yeah.
I mean, it may have looked visually striking to me some 12 or 13 years ago or longer, but, man, it just it either hasn't aged well, or there may be a problem with the fact that I've been watching a lot of those old 1940s movies that were somewhat of a visual inspiration for it. It has this real Fritz Lang meets, you know, John Huston, Raoul Walsh type Warner Brothers, melodrama, film noir type thing. You know, it's got all these different stylistic influences kind of mixed in, but it just didn't work for me. Maybe I've seen too many good old movies that possibly inspired it.
Well, you mentioned there Hellraiser, and I'm going to bring up one of the ones that was high on the list of mine that were disappointments, and that's Hellraiser 2.
Oh boy,
I watched that upstairs on the big screen not long ago, maybe about a month back at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched one, and one was still very, very good. Not a masterpiece, but it's still very good. Mm-hmm. And I was really excited, and I put 2 straight in, and boy, what a fresh cup of shit that was. That was just god-awful.
Did you like it when you saw it in the theater back in the 80s?
I didn't catch it in the theater. I caught it very shortly after it hit VHS.
Okay.
And I quite enjoyed it. Because I really liked Hellraiser a lot back then. So, you know, it was... I think I built myself to being on such a high of the first one that when I watched the second one, it really... It couldn't have faltered as being a bad movie. But now I watch it with a fresher set of eyes. And, boy, that second one was just... I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah, I liked it when I saw it in the theater, like in 88, 89, whenever it came out. I remember it was a Christmas release. It was notorious as a horror film released around Christmas and flopping.
Right.
And New Line, or it wasn't New Line, it was New World Pictures, couldn't really afford a bomb at the time. And it pretty much sabotaged their theatrical release of The Punisher with Dolph Lundgren, because that was the trailer that ran before the movie, and that never got a theatrical release in my area of the country. And yeah, and I remember watching it on video, and it was the director's, they had released a director's cut, which was way more graphic gore, and it was pretty disturbing, and I still thought it was effective. But if I watch it now, I'd probably just, you know, psh.
Yeah, I don't think you'll like it.
A lot of horror films have aged poorly for me anyway, but watching that, something like that now, I would be like, ugh, God, you know, this is just the end of everything, end of this genre for me.
Yeah, I know, you put that nail on the coffin a few years back.
Yeah.
Another one that didn't hold up for me was this one I saw in the theater, at a revival theater a number of years back, and that was Raging Bull. I was just bored stupid by it when I was watching it. I went out with Rob, and he and I caught something, and Raging Bull was second as part of the double feature. And I watched it, I'm like, so I said to him, I said, this is crap. What did I like about it? He goes, no, man, Sharp, it's a good movie. I said, no, this is just crap. I can't get into it. And while the performances are certainly there, and that can't be faulted, or Scorsese's direction, it's just the story itself, just, you know, this whole love triangle shit, and this whole triangle between Joe Pesci and De Niro and Kathy Moriarty, and it just, you know, I was really, really bored by it when I watched it again. What else you got, John?
It's funny, Anchorman is another one for me that I watched for a podcast, and I believe it was our podcast, not sure. I had done I'd watched it, you know, when I was in the theater, some 2003, whenever the hell it came out. I was laughing so hard, like my face was hurting, like I had sunburn.
Right.
And I saw it, I think, on, of all things, regular television, censored. Saw at least an hour of it a couple of years later, and was still laughing at it. Like, there was enough funny stuff in it. Then when I watched it for a podcast just a few years ago, I was astonished at how unfunny I found it. And I think it may be a case of I already know all the jokes, and a lot of the jokes are based on surprise elements.
Yeah.
And if you know all the jokes and the twist, and it's not like a Zucker Brothers movie where it's layered with so many jokes that, oh, I didn't notice that the first time around, or, you know, because I was laughing too hard. It isn't that crammed with jokes, and I think that's probably why it just didn't hold up well for me. Because I thought Anchorman 2 was hilarious, but I bet if I watched it again, I'd be like, oh, I'm not laughing at this because I know all the gags.
You know Garrow just died 1,000 deaths hearing that, don't you? I don't know you, John!
Garrow, to his credit, I think kind of realized what I didn't dig about Private Parts of Howard Stern years later, which I thought was fun enough in the theater, but I didn't find it aged very well at all.
Yeah.
You know, and also because a lot of those jokes are such old... It's old hack jokes, you know, like him seeing his future wife and seeing her like an angel, like an illusion or whatever. I mean, that goes as far back as probably Laurel and Hardy movies, I think.
Yeah. I will tell you another one that didn't hold up for me, and it's another horror flick. And it was, I'm going to cop up a whole lot of shit from this on the Land of the Creep, guys, but Halloween H2O just bored me stupid when I watched it again.
You actually liked it in the theater?
I did, yeah. Actually, I can tell you when I saw it. John, I saw it on Christmas Day, 1998.
Uh-huh.
At the drive-in with Studio 54 as the double feature. And I had a blast watching it at the drive-in. You know, had a lot of fun. Picked it up on DVD pretty much soon after it came out. Enjoyed it again. Watched as part of a... Okay, I did myself a Halloween retrospect and watched all the movies, save for the zombie ones. Mm-hmm. And just said, boy, this is not holding up. This is just crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it because you knew all the shock, the, you know, the jumps and the twist and...
Yeah. I don't think it was. It was just the fact that it really... I thought it was a lot more fast-paced than what it was.
Right.
And it was just felt clunky with the whole... Like, the whole dynamic between Jamie Lee Curtis and Adam Arkin was just... It was just embarrassing to watch.
Because I did not like it in the theater. I thought it was pretty bad to begin with. And I was looking forward to it as well, because it was like, oh, John Carpenter almost directed it. You know, it was like this weird seal of quality. And but when I saw it, it was just predictable, and by the numbers, it was like I was watching Halloween 4 again.
Yeah. Yeah, but I did the complete opposite there, where I watched Halloween 6, the theatrical cut,
right,
and did not like it when I first watched it on VHS. Watched it again as part of this, and said, man, I actually quite enjoyed that. I do have the producer's cut on a bootleg, and that there's a far superior flick. Not a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination, but a much better version of Part 6. And now with that new box set coming out, or that's coming out,
yeah,
with the audio sync issues on Part 4, well done, Scream Factory. how's them recalls going?
Company is the master Shout Factory. They really try, but they have had more audio screw-ups and manufacturing screw-ups than just about any disc company I've ever known.
Have they really?
Yeah, because they had problems with the Bruce Lee set and they had to recall them.
Oh, that's right, they did too.
Yeah.
Is there any sort of quality control when they do this crap? When they put this stuff out?
I don't know. I think they might be too much in a rush to make that release date, and they just don't. They overlook stuff. I don't know how the hell that happens. Yeah. What makes them look worse is probably when they try to make excuses for it. Like, they blame the Bruce Lee problem on Fortune Star, the licensor, which is probably true to an extent, but they should have looked at those transfers and said, hey, this is not up to snuff.
Exactly, and just say, look, due to difficulties we're having, we have to push this back 6 to 8 weeks. Who cares? And at least you're not going through this crap of a recall and like, right, holy shit, you know, you get these into us now and we'll get a replacement. It's just... You know, it's the, you know, the old stitch in time sort of phrase there.
Yeah, and I respect what they're doing. They're kind of keeping the idea of home video purchasing alive by, you know, putting out these bells and whistles, special editions of all these kind of, you know, not really mainstream titles, but it's unfortunate they just don't have better quality control and before they sign the dotted line, you know?
Yeah, I gotcha. Have you got any more that you can bring to mind?
No, my main thing was Dark City, which and I'll tell you this, the problem with Dark City is something I've noticed with a lot of films from the 90s, and I've been afraid to rewatch The Crow, which is by the same director.
I was just going to ask you about The Crow, yeah.
I see, because it's probably going to have that same look where it just looks like a Sisters of Mercy video with guns. You know?
Yeah.
And it's aging poor. It's like watching a music video from that era. You're like laughing that was even considered a sophisticated look at the time or trend.
Like an Evanescence music video, right?
Right. Imagine how that's going to look to somebody who dug that stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Years ago. And I'm talking about music videos I like I like the Sisters of Mercy, but it's like watching a movie inspired by an MTV aesthetic is almost like a dead end. It's like you're really asking for disappointment.
But that was,
especially 20 years later.
But that was such a big thing with The Crow when it came out. I remember that. I remember catching that in the theater, and I really enjoyed it. I have it on Blu-ray. I have it on Blu-ray. I picked up the American one because it was a much better print of it. And I think it was like $4 on the Black Friday sale, maybe last year, the year before. And I just have not revisited it yet. Now that I've got a few days off work, I may head up to the upstairs tonight and pop it on and see how it holds up.
Right. Well, another one was The Long Kiss Goodnight, the Shane Black movie.
I never watched it.
Coincidentally, also a New Line production. I really liked it when I saw it in the theater in like 98, whenever the hell it came out. Watched it on DVD a couple of years ago. I was just like, oh boy. There's some things about it that are in just incredibly bad taste, and it's not really the fault of the movie. It's just the fact that it pretty much creates the 9/11 conspiracy with the CIA orchestrating a phony Arab terrorist attack. And it's just like, oh, this really has not aged well. And some of the, just seeing what's happened to Gina Davis's career since, it just, some of the attempts at smart-ass, sassy dialogue kind of fall flat. It's almost like she was miscast in that film. And but the movie probably only got made because she and her husband basically made the film, or her husband at the time, Rennie Harlan.
Yes.
It did not age, and Sam Jackson was the big actor at the time just because of Pulp Fiction, and kind of, I thought, miscast as kind of the lead.
Oh, dear. Okay, let me ask you this. Have you got any films that have done the reverse, where you've hated them when you first saw them and then liked them the second time or third time around?
Trainspotting.
Really?
I did not like it in the theater. Caro found me the Laserdisc for like $5. Some stupid, crazy, cheap price when they were liquidating Laserdisc at Tower Records or something. Yeah. And he sent it to me. And he says, here, give it another shot. And the interesting thing was, I watched the Laserdisc and really enjoyed it. And I was like, wow, what's the difference? And I realized maybe that when Miramax put it in theaters or whichever company, they actually had the Scottish dialogue re-looped by the actors to make it sound more American-friendly.
Really?
Yeah. And, like, there was a theatrical, domestic, dubbed version where they re-looped the dialogue to supposedly tone down the thickness of the Scottish accents, but I really didn't understand what the hell they were saying. And it could have been the quality of the theater presentation, you know, because theaters in the 90s did not all have, like, terrific stereo sound. That was kind of a myth. It's the standards for theatrical presentation are a lot better these days. A lot of times the sound would just be coming up from up front, and you can always hear the dialogue. It could be muffled. Then when I saw the Laserdisc and watched it, I, like, enjoyed the hell out of it. And I understood all the slang, everything, and didn't have any problem with the Scottish dialect, so could it have been the dubbing they did to supposedly make it more comprehensible didn't work for me? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe I wasn't too bothered by the attitude of the movie and the drug thing, you know, by then. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it on home video.
Did you know that I read the statement, you know, the divorce papers of Rennie Harlan and Gina Davis? You know what it said on there, for reason for separation?
What was that?
No, Cutthroat Island. Didn't have irreconcilable differences. It just said Cutthroat Island.
Although Long Kiss Goodnight actually was made after Cutthroat Island.
Oh, was it? I thought it was before.
Yeah. In fact, they had to cut the budget a little bit because they couldn't get the Cutthroat Island killed Caralco. So New Line didn't want to take that same budget chance.
Oh, okay. Then maybe it was the set in there instead of stupid Finnish filmmaker who was incompetent.
Yeah. It was no Ford Fairlane.
Hell no. No. I mean,
That's his prime work. And he actually proudly did a commentary for it. So he gets props up for me for that.
That never made the Australian DVD. God damn it.
Really?
God, no.
It was a $5 bargain bin here, and it had the Rennie Harlan commentary.
Bloody hell. They need to release it on Blu-ray now. Like right now.
1080p.
High fucking definition, you bastard. You.
That better be in plasma.
Yeah. Yeah, look at the goo over what's her fucking name's face. The one... Jim Carrey. I forgot her name at the moment. I'm not feeling well today.
I forgot her name as well.
Yeah, look at that girl over Lauren Holly's fucking face. Hey, you want some jizz for you jizz, eh?
Yeah, he was barely even that obscene in the film. I'm sure you love Robert Englund's Australian accent in it.
I thought he was playing a Brit, wasn't he?
I thought he was playing Australian.
God, if he was, that was awful.
Maybe he's done such a bad British thing that I thought he was trying to be an Australian.
Yeah, I thought he was doing like those, you know, typical British henchmen that you see, like, you're breaking my heart, Ford.
It was terrible.
What's your point?
Yeah, it was like, whatever you say. I was just like,
He's trying to model himself after, what's his name? Hugh Keyes-Byrne in Mad Max, the tow cutter.
Definitely.
Whatever I say. Anyway, I have got a submission here that's just come in for us, which I'm going to read out. This is from Leslie, the lovely Leslie sent us one. She's done a reversal one, though. She says, when I first saw this Something About Mary in the theatre in, like, 1995, I hated it so much I would have walked out if I could have. When I finally agreed to see it again years later, I found it more entertaining. So there's one that I have only seen once. Something About Mary. Thank you for that, Leslie, for that submission. What's your thoughts on that?
I saw it once in a theater with a girlfriend, and she liked it, and I didn't care much for it because it just didn't make me laugh enough. Like it had the thing, the reputation was like it was just laugh a minute, and I just wasn't on that wavelength when I watched it. I laughed maybe two or three times.
Oh, okay then. Yeah.
But I know, I mean, a lot of people loved it. In fact, at the time, they were talking about cutting it down to a PG rating and re-releasing it so kids could go see
it. It wouldn't have worked.
No, but they really did talk about that because it was making so much money. And like, hey, we'll make more money if kids could come see it.
Hmm. That I did not know.
Yeah, but I don't think they went through with it, but they had talked about it.
Okay.
And it's also that, to me, that type of humor, like jizz in the air or whatever, is like the type of jokes I made in high school. So if I think it's something that's easy that I might have made a joke about, then I don't find it as funny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's funnier for me to see Bud Abbott yell at Lou Costello and call him a scaredy cat.
Yeah.
For some reason. That'll crack me up far more than anything in a Farrelly Brothers movie.
Yeah. Anyway, Liz.
Come on, what are you, yellow? Quit being a fraidy cat.
Yeah. Anyway, Leslie goes on to mention, Leslie goes on to say that that one of the reasons that it was funnier the second time around is because her boyfriend at the time had told her that he actually had the same zipper experience as Ben Stiller in the beginning of the movie. So a guy having his privates caught in the zipper was what made the film more entertaining for Leslie the second time around.
Women love the genital mutilation thing.
That's
so
funny.
If they watch the Street Fighter with Sonny Chiba, they'd probably laugh at that too.
Oh yeah, nothing like a cranium x-ray shot when someone's...
Plus he rips a guy's balls off.
Yeah.
And not only does he do that, he sniffs them before he tosses them. They got the film an X rating in the US back in 1974.
Yeah. I'll tell you actually one film that I thought was quite good when I first saw it, and I watched it again. It was something I just watched very recently within the last 7 to 10 days. Do you ever heard of one called The Story of Ricky?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was just fucking dumb.
I never liked it. I thought it was hideous. It's like, it has these martial artists in it. It has terrible martial arts scenes.
Yeah. And what is that?
Like,
is that Korean?
They don't even look like they're fighting. It's a Hong Kong production that adapts a Japanese comic book.
Really? Okay.
And it had some Japanese money in it. I kind of wonder if some of the Japanese production money is what made the action scenes not really up to snuff, because Japan was not making good action movies at the time. Hong Kong was like where you went for action, but it was almost like it was a made-for-Japanese video movie. But it's got a cult following over here just because of the gore effects.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I don't
care about that stuff. It just looks silly to me.
Yeah. I mean, there's other films as well out there. Toxic Avenger was one I used to quite enjoy. Now I think it's just pathetic.
I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah, I liked it back as a kid. You know, hey, it was funny. Melvin,
right.
Melvin with Junko, whatever his name was, and he becomes a toxic Avenger. But now I just watch it again. I think this is just crap. I feel the same way about any trauma film, basically. I just find trauma ridiculous.
I can't stand those films. Well, they try too hard to be funny for me.
Exactly, and the same thing. How the fuck did Lloyd Kaufman become so popular and so rich from those shit movies, you know?
Because I don't think he spent anything on them, and he put a lot of creativity into promoting them.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, and he developed a reputation as being a guy who produced shit movies and somehow parlayed that into some temporary financial success. I heard financially they've been hurting for the last few years.
Okay. It was like blood-sucking freaks. A friend of mine back at the time sat me down to watch that one. That was one of the old Palace video, you know, nasties. And I watched. And I thought, I said, this is just stupid. Really,
I never liked it either.
Yeah, I never liked blood-sucking freaks in the style. It was just stupid. But that little midget Rufus, it was just dumb.
Yeah. It was like, to me, it was like watching a boring Grindhouse film.
Yeah,
like a Grindhouse Ruffy or something that something weird would bootleg.
Yeah, that's right. Let me ask you, did you ever watch Exorcist 2?
I saw it on CBS when I was a kid, like in 1979 or
1980. Right, right. Did you ever like it?
I don't recall having any opinion of it because I think I was just thought it weird. Because I didn't understand it. I hadn't seen the first film at that age. And CBS was showing it in this bizarre cut. And I think it's something like three or four versions of it at one point.
There's two,
Oh, yeah. It just seems like there's a dozen cuts or something. But I just remember being weird. I never tried to revisit it after that. Probably should, simply because Richard Burton is in the movie.
Don't. I watched it two nights back. It is stinking awful.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, it's so bad, John. It's like, I didn't watch The Exorcist because I'd seen that enough times. I was like, I don't need to watch that again.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I had The Exorcist 2 because I nearly bought that complete anthology Blu-ray set and I cancelled it. I thought, well, I've got all the movies in the garage on DVD. That'll do fine for me. I don't need to see them in high def. And from what I've read, the actual prints of them that Warner Brothers used on the Blu-ray set weren't that flash, so...
Right.
Yeah, no big loss. So I popped in Exorcist 2. Oh, just because I popped in Exorcist 2 and just sat there with just my freaking jaw on the floor. I couldn't believe how bad it was. Richard Burton was a mess. You could see that he was just embarrassed to be there, especially the dialogue. Once you got 45 minutes in the film, it was... Kokomo will defeat Pazuzu. I mean, if you do a drinking game every time they say Kokomo or Pazuzu, you will not last. Because they must say it about 300 times each time.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous. It's, I don't know what the hell's happened there. Linda Blair looks stoned in the film, which I'm sure she is.
It was probably when she was banging Rick Springfield.
Yeah, yeah.
Around that time. It was long before Rick James.
Who the hell shacks up with Rick James?
Seriously. She did for a while.
I know. That's what I can't... It's just odd.
The funny thing is, she claims he treated her great. Like, he was a total gentleman.
Rick James?
Yeah. She had nothing negative to say about him. She was stunned when she heard about what happened years later. She said, he was great. So, you know, never had a problem with him.
unlike Rick Springfield, apparently was an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's because, I don't know, maybe he thought that she was Jesse's girl. That's a shit joke, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I watched Exorcist 2, I was just fucking stunned how bad it was. Oh my God, John, it was shocking. And I really wanted to like it, because, you know, everyone just ran around saying, oh, Exorcist 2, one of the worst sequels ever. I thought, it can't be that bad. And it's not the worst sequel ever, but boy, it's not good.
It was a troubled production, from what I've read.
Yeah, I bet it was. I mean, you can just...
A lot of last-minute reshoots and disastrous test screenings and re-edits and, you know, never anything good. It was just a disaster. It was one of those movies that didn't need to be made. Like, in fact, Warner Brothers re-released the first Exorcist in theaters in 79. I think they kind of apologized for The Exorcist 2.
It would have made more money than The Exorcist 2 as well, I'm sure, on a rerun.
I think it did. I think it did well in its 79 re-release.
Yeah. But I've actually started watching Exorcist 3 now. That one I want to see again because it's been a long-ass time since I've seen it. And I'm only about 10 minutes into it because I had to head off for work the other night. But I am going to finish that one tonight, so I will let you guys know later. Through the magic of time, what it was like, what I thought of it.
Right. Well, I was going to say that I feel like horror films really do not fare well on rewatch. I think it's like the one genre it's hard to rewatch those again and again.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Well, you got no others that you want to bring up?
I was trying to think of a Hammer film because I've been rewatching a lot of those recently, but I never had like a great. Like, I never thought they were great. I always liked them, but they weren't, like, great movies or excellent movies. They were good. And rewatching them recently, like, I watched Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed, and it was actually really good watching it as an adult.
Okay.
I understood a lot more going on in it. And it's a great-looking DVD that Warner Brothers put out in one of those crappy snap cases about 10 years ago. But Cushing's performance in it is terrific. The only problem is there's no... sympathetic protagonist because the young couple in the film isn't terribly likable. They're tied in with drug smuggling or drug selling or a drug ring out of the hospital and everything, and it just doesn't really You know, there's no good guys in the film. It doesn't feel like it.
Okay.
That's probably the only thing that hurts. And there's no really effective monster. Like, people will argue the Hammer films, their Frankensteins were never about the monster, but it's a bit of a problem. Also, one of the Christopher Lee Dracula movies that I liked years ago, Scarred Dracula, I rewatched that. It was just laughably bad.
I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, one of the most violent of the Dracula ones.
It is, but...
Yeah.
The effects and... The funny thing is, it's actually more faithful to the novel than the first Dracula film they made.
Yep.
Because it's got the couple staying at the castle and everything. It has scenes straight out of the novel that they didn't do in the 50s film. But the bad effects are pretty laughable, and there's parts of it just look like they just shot it on the cheap and quickly. Like, I'm starting to realize how those Hammer movies were made as quickies almost. Like, okay, this was the budget issue. This was the cheap set they had, you know. Sometimes they look great, and other times you can just see, oh man, let's use an aquarium castle for this shot and put it in front of a dirt mound and say that's Dracula's castle.
Oh, God.
So, it does happen. It's definitely there. But the biggest standout film, and the one, like I said, that inspired the episode was Dark City. It's just like 90s films are the ones that I fear the most of rewatching. Like, actively. Actually, almost anything from the last 20 years, I actually don't want to be in a hurry to rewatch again.
But Dark City was the one that was pretty much the impetus for this show, was it?
Yeah, that was the core film that sparked the whole thing. I was just like, wow. And I really recall being impressed with this when I walked out of the theater.
I mean, I've had that in my hands before, like being part of the, you know, 2 for $20 sale and on Blu-ray, and so I thought, oh, I don't know. I've just never really picked it up apart from that. I mean, if it rolls up on Netflix, I'll give it a watch.
Right. Well, a huge flaw is the characterization. It's like nobody's a character in the movie. Everybody's a cipher. It's like the everyman, the beautiful girl, the, you know, burnout detective, the, you know, everybody is just sort of like, they're like a sort of the prostitute who's played by Melissa George, looking gorgeous. You know, it's like,
oh really?
The serial killer, the puppet masters. It's just nothing is nothing feels like a real character in the film.
Oh, okay, no worries. All right, well, we'll say goodbye to John. We'll catch you next episode,
And
we'll say hello to Hunter.
Hey everybody, Hunter here.
All right, and we're going to carry on now with the listeners' ones. That the films that didn't hold up for them. Next up, we'll get our buddy Rick Gutierrez, Big Daddy Goot, from the USG and
Where Romano.
That's a term I haven't heard in a long time. Where Romano.
I know, bringing it back. Where Romano.
Yeah, and he says, I'm shocked by the first one. He says Tron. And
really, Rick said that.
Yeah, I'm shocked. Yeah, because I know
Disney fanatic Rick.
Yeah.
Disney can do no wrong, Rick.
He just lost your Disney card. Mickey's going to come and take it off you through the night. And the head of Walt Disney's going to scream at you.
He's probably going to accuse Rick of being a Jew.
Yeah, that's right. He's going to go make you poop at the cornfields, right?
Old school MMC listeners will get that one.
Yeah, way, way back. Okay, so yeah, Tron, he said, and Police Academy 2 to 7. Well, I don't think they ever really held
up. I was going to say, like, did those ever hold up? I don't know.
I don't think so. 2, maybe. 2 was mildly entertaining.
Because, I mean, I think even though this is a meaningless list, but the, like, IMDb bottom, like, 50 films or whatever, used to be pretty well populated by Police Academy sequels.
Oh, dear.
I don't know if it still is. I don't look at that stuff anymore, but...
Yeah, well, when Bubba Smith pulls out and says, I'm out, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and Steve Guttenberg as well. You've come to the end. Tron. I watched Tron, I think, about 2 years back, a year and a half to 2 years back. I really enjoyed it, but that was the first time I'd ever seen it. So
okay.
I have no frame of reference, you know, from then till now.
You never saw it back then and had your mind blown by the special effects or anything?
No. Yeah, no, I was really, really enjoyed it. I also enjoyed Tron Legacy as well.
I thought Tron Legacy didn't get its due.
Yeah.
There was some innovative directing in there.
And, it was.
Like, Joseph Kosinski did that. I mean, not the most innovative story, but the filmmaking was really strong. And same with Oblivion. Like, it had really a really strong, like, directorial sense, even though the story was kind of something you've seen a million times in sci-fi.
Mm. And the 3D in Tron Legacy was unbelievable, I'll tell you.
Oh, okay. I didn't see it in the theater, so I missed that.
Yeah, well, I got the 3D Blu-ray, and holy shit. Looks unbelievable. All right. Okay, thanks for that, Rick. James Bradford Case says Public Enemies. I've never seen this.
Public Enemies, yeah, I mean, I can see that. I saw it in the theater. I thought it was all right. It had great shootouts, but, you know.
Yeah.
Not the best Michael Mann film.
No? Okay. Would you say it was better than Miami Vice? Because I really did not like Miami Vice.
Yes, it's a lot better than Miami Vice.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, because that would be one of the lowest.
It's worth seeing. I mean, you know, the performances in it are good. It just has some slow stretches through it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the shootouts are amazing. But I think John Milius' Dillinger is a better movie about those characters. I mean, those figures in history.
Right, right. I think the last one I liked of Michael Mann's was Collateral. I quite enjoyed that, yeah.
Collateral was really good.
It was. Okay, thanks, James. Let's, oh, here we go. We had Rick and we had James. Rick James.
All we need is a person named Bitch and we're good.
Yeah. Well, someone's first name is Crack Pipe.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
And, oh, yeah. Okay, so anyway, next up, Andy, our good friend, Andy Seams.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Andy says, and the artwork by Andy on the website and all over the Facebook and social media is thanks to him,
yep.
The master. And he says Independence Day.
Yeah, that's one that doesn't hold up. I mean, I was the perfect age for that when I saw it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a stupid fucking movie. But if anybody remembers the Hollywood Saloon, Andy told his story about that one on there, thinking it was a cool sci-fi movie when he first saw it, and then recommending it to, like, his nephew or something, and his nephew started watching it. I think it was his nephew or cousin or something.
Yeah.
And he said his jaw hit the floor because it was just so shitty. Like, Randy Quaid was really irritating and all that.
I don't think I've ever seen Independence Day.
No, you're not missing much.
No. I know it was huge when it came out. It was just, like, everywhere.
Yeah, seeing the spaceship blow up the White House? No.
Well, yeah.
Like, what more can you ask for?
Roland Emmerich, right?
Roland Emmerich.
Wow, great. I didn't even see his 2012 shit either.
Oh, you're not missing anything.
No.
It's garbage.
Yeah. I did watch 10,000 BC, and that was absolutely stupid.
I couldn't finish it.
I did, but boy, man.
I was hoping it would at least be like some Robert E. Howard-style Conan stuff, even though that's a lot to expect from Roland Emmerich.
Yeah.
But I was at least hoping for something like that.
Yeah. But no.
Sucked,
alright. Alright, well, I can't comment on the last two. Anyway, I can on the next one. Now, our friend Richard Kuhn says, Nightmare on Elm Street blew me away as 11-year-old, but when I go back and watch it, the bad acting really sticks out. Same with some of the sets, no extras, and the ending is kind of lame. Okay.
I think the ending is one of the strong points of that movie. It's kind of surreal and weird.
Yeah.
Leaves you with a weird feeling.
I think it still holds up for myself.
I was thinking about it and I almost put it on my list, but then I was like, no, there's some scenes in that movie that are still pretty scary, and I do think that ending is fucked up in a good way.
I think
kind of David style, you know?
Yeah, I think it's more disturbing than scary for me. I mean, the scares really don't really get to me. It's more disturbing, the fact that you can't go to sleep without,
I mean,
you know.
It's not sticking with me afterwards, but like that bit where the girl gets killed, that first girl gets killed by Freddy, where she's like being cut apart in the...
Oh, yeah, you know, in the bedroom.
Up. I mean, that scene is still pretty harrowing.
And very inventive as well, how they did it.
Yeah.
Well, they actually had to... Because I got the big book of that. I can't remember what it's called. I picked up in the 90s, and they had to glue all the furniture to the roof and shut it upside down. Yeah,
I saw pictures of Wes Craven on the set and in this upside-down room and stuff.
Yeah. So I would probably say no. I still think it holds up. But I can see where people would think it has. And it's like 80s cheese for sure, without a doubt.
Right.
So, okay, and the other one that Richard says was, I rewatched The Crow a few years ago, and in my honest opinion, really doesn't hold up that too well either. That one I was going to watch again as well. I have the Blu-ray of that, which you guys would have heard when I was talking with John just before about, and I have not watched it yet. So, I probably am going to go with Richard and think it's not going to hold up.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen The Crow, so...
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Comment, but you know what? I bet it holds up better than any of the sequels.
You didn't like Crow 2 with Iggy Pop?
It's the... Fuck no. Vincent Perez?
Yeah.
Or Crow 3 with Edward Furlong and Tara Reid? Or no, that was at Crow 4. Crow 3 had Edward Mabius and... Kirsten Dunst.
Crow 3 had Mark Dacascos, didn't it? Or was that the TV series?
That was the TV series.
Oh, okay then. I was getting ahead of myself there.
Eric Mobius. I don't know. He was the guy from the Resident Evil movie. He's the male lead in that.
Yeah. Oh, well. Okay. Anyway, thanks, Richard. Let's move on. Eric Sulev. G'day, Eric. Says Argento's Opera.
Yeah. I could see that. I remember seeing Opera and thinking how shocking it was at the time.
Yeah.
But 80s Argento doesn't hold up that well, most of it. Not most of a good chunk of it doesn't hold up as well.
Okay.
You know, it has like that... That was when Argento was putting like Motorhead songs and everything.
Oh,
and I don't know.
Really?
Getting killed. Yeah, jeez. Like people getting killed to like Saxon and Motorhead just isn't very scary to me.
That would only play well when our mates Malcolm and Kenneth were talking about Saxon and Motorhead,
oh,
mate.
Oi, go for Piccadilly Circus.
Oi, Kenneth.
You know what I think?
What you think, mate?
I think you fuckers with the Midnight Movie Cowboys need to fuck off.
I think you might be right, mate.
Yeah.
You go put a fucking pickled onion up your ass, you pack a bunch of fucking butt plugs, you.
They don't know good fish and chips if it smacked them in the face.
Who fucking wraps fish and chips in butcher's paper, mate? Fucking newspaper. I want to read what a cunt Margaret Thatcher was from the 80s when I eat my fish and chips.
I'm going to go hang out with Malcolm fucking McLaren.
Oh, God, we've got to stop these British impressions. We've got to piss off 51 million people in the space of one show.
We're going to reawaken the empire, you know.
Yeah, that's right. David Cameron's a cocksucker. Did you know that, mate? We just want him back with that. All right, let's carry on. Okay, you had a couple there that you wanted to bring up. Mm. And then we'll get into the ones that you want to discuss and the other ones I've got to bring up as well.
Okay, yeah, for me, on I put the word out on my page to send me your movies that don't hold up, and I only got response from one dude, but still. Franco Ismaili says that Fight Club is one that does not hold up for him, and I can see that.
Yeah, I can too, actually.
I can see it, but I do think that Fight Club is, you know, there's some on my list of movies that don't hold up. There are some that are very of the time that I don't think hold up, and I think Fight Club might be in that sort of group, because I think Fight Club is really indicative of pre-9/11 America.
Right.
When I say pre-9/11, I mean like right before, because I mean it's a movie about like masculinity reasserting itself, and while masculinity's been under attack for a long time, it was before, like it was right before we had like these actual concerns and fears penetrating America,
yep,
like terrorism and stuff like that. So this movie was like about dudes without problems, like, okay, you know, sort of getting back in touch with their primal nature.
Yeah.
And that's what it was kind of about. And I think it was sort of, you know, a perfect movie for 1999, but it sort of seems absurd when you look at it today. But at the time, it really seemed like this sort of crazy punk rock movie, you know?
Yeah. You know what, actually, I would throw into that mix as well? I'd say Seven as well. David Fincher's Seven.
Going for it, yeah, Seven.
Yeah, that'd be another one.
It's not as shocking today, and I think it's probably because there's been so many movies like it, but, you know, it's definitely an influential movie, I'd say.
Yeah, but it's just one of those ones that I think if I was to watch it again would just be like, I'm just bored by this.
I saw it recently, and it's still pretty good, but it's not as shocking as it was, you know, probably.
Right, right.
But Franco also says anything Guy Ritchie. But I went back and watched Lock, Stock a year ago, and I thought it was pretty fucking awesome.
So. Yeah, I have to sort of disagree with that one. I think Lock, Stock and Snatch as well are two that really hold up.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lock, Stock and Snatch, I still enjoy those movies. Everything after that, not so much. But,
oh, I did like that first Sherlock Holmes. I saw that three times.
Yeah, the first Sherlock Holmes is pretty good. The second one is
not so much
a retread.
Yeah, basically, I think they may have killed off that little series with that second one, which is a shame because I actually really enjoyed that first one a lot.
No, the first one I think is the best thing he's done that isn't Snatch or Lock, Stock.
Yeah,
and you know it's Robert Downey Jr. carrying that movie too.
I never saw the one he did Rock and Roller.
I didn't see it either.
Didn't catch it and swept away. I just didn't even bother with. Mm-mm. No.
And there was also that one he did, Revolver.
Yeah, that one too. That one I didn't even know came out. I didn't even know it was his. To be honest,
was. I think it was really hated by the press. Like, it was just it was considered to be an extremely pretentious take on Snatch and Lock, Stock.
Yeah, that was his post swept away flick, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was they had the knives out for that one straight away.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we're done with the listener ones, I believe.
Yeah.
So, let's hear yours because you said you got a few.
Yeah, I wrote down quite a few here. The first one that popped into mind when you say movies that don't hold up is Return of the Jedi.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Like, you know, and I know when that movie came out, there were a lot of people who thought it sucked. But when I saw it, I was a kid, and I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, me too.
And when I was in college, I heard some people talking shit about Return of the Jedi, and I went, what are you talking about? That movie's great.
Yep.
And I went back and watched it to sort of prove to myself that it was good, and it's like one of those early instances where I went back and watched a movie and went, oh...
This okay.
Bad, you know.
Yep.
And this was already when the wheels had come off with the episodes 1 and 2 and maybe even 3, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so I mean the new trilogy is bad stuff had already started, but you know, I still thought that the first three were all gold, but not so much.
No.
It's just like you watch the first two and you have this amazing build up, and then it with Return of the Jedi just squanders that promise for, you know, just goofy nonsense.
Yep.
It has amazing special effects, you know.
Yeah.
That part's great about it's great, but
true.
Number two, this is a movie that is beloved and influential, but I think people like it. I don't think people like it as much as they say they do today. And that's Easy Rider.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's been a god dog's age since I last saw it. And I was just bored stupid by it from the start, really. I didn't think it was... I mean, it's definitely one of its time. I mean...
Right, like, I mean, there are things about it that I love, like the soundtrack. Like, the opening credits are dope with the Steppenwolf and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have the songs by the band and all that. And there are some great scenes in it. But it just, when I saw it, this is one that, like, I didn't love the first time I saw it. But I was like, okay, I can see why this shook things up.
Yeah.
But it's not really, I don't think it's a movie that holds up necessarily.
Right.
I think it's very of its time. The hippie culture stuff, like them visiting the commune, it just seems asinine today.
Yeah.
You know, it just... And it's whole like the whole New Orleans scene where they're like in the cemetery. It just feels like a bunch of guys who took a lot of acid and watched a bunch of French New Wave movies and sort of tried to do something like that. But it spoke to the hippie culture at the time. But the hippie culture died off for a reason because it was bullshit. The next one I have is Rebel Without a Cause.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. Because I've
you seem uncomfortable by that suggestion.
Well, I've got the James Dean trilogy Blu-ray set, and I did watch East of Eden and Rebel not long ago. Early this year, I dare say, when it came out, or March, whatever it was. And East of Eden, yes, I can understand. Rebel, I still thoroughly enjoy quite a bit. Giant, I've not rewatched yet.
Right.
I've not gotten there.
And Giant's one that a lot of people say doesn't hold up. But Rebel, for me, like, I think it gets a bit of a pass because of Dean, but it probably seemed edgier at the time. When I watched it, it just felt like an after-school special to me.
Okay.
Yeah. It just did. It didn't resonate with me at all. I mean, I could see the charisma with James Dean, but it just didn't. It didn't do anything for me. Maybe I need to watch it again.
But yeah,
it's like a classic movie. I saw it and I was like, "What's this all about?"
True.
The next one's another. This one's an Oscar winner, Best Picture winner. Right. The Lost Weekend.
Oh, I've never seen it.
It just, when I look at it now, it just feels like a really asinine depiction of alcoholism. Like, mm-hmm. he's at the theater and he wants a drink, and all the dancing girls turn into like giant bottles and stuff. I don't know, when movies deal with alcoholism and addiction, they always feel so ham-handed.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really, it feels like it doesn't get at the core of what all that stuff's about. And that brings me to my next movie, which is a more modern one, Requiem for a Dream.
I always hated it. I always thought it was a piece of shit.
I just think Requiem for a Dream is over the top. It's
ridiculous.
It's the Lost Weekend of today, except it makes Lost Weekend look like a Bergman movie in terms of subtlety.
Yeah.
Like the soundtrack, everything is just so operatic and ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ellen Burstyn stuff in it, I can kind of see, because that's something that's rarely dealt with, like pill addiction and body image issues. But the thing people take away from it most is the heroin stuff, and just like Jennifer Connelly doing live sex shows for junk. It's just, I don't know.
It was
felt
dumb.
So that montage, it's just so
I'm not a big fan of that guy.
Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah, Aronofsky. Yeah.
Did you see his Noah movie?
Nope.
Ugh.
Did I watch Noah? No. Noah. I did watch The Wrestler. I thought it was okay.
The Wrestler is probably my favorite thing he's done.
Yeah, it was okay. It was a bit overhyped, really. I mean, Mickey Rourke was all right.
It was overhyped, but I still thought it was a solid character movie.
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
Okay, what else you got?
Forrest Gump, another Oscar winner.
Yeah, I can totally see that, yeah. I think I enjoyed it the first time.
Well, when I saw it when I was a young man, I thought it was this amazing kind of journey through 20th century pop culture.
Yep.
But when you look at it now, it's just Tom Hanks' performance is just so cloying, and, you know, it's just so... Jenna, you know, I don't know. It's full of like little catchphrases and things. And you'd see the same writer did Benjamin Button, and it has the same formula to it.
Yep.
The next one I have, this is one I loved when I was a kid. Watched it over and over again. Now it's a chore to sit through, is Moonraker.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. A lot of those Bonds would fall into this category, really.
I mean, I still love a lot of the Sean Connery ones, but boy, oh boy, Moonraker, it's just a chore to sit through now. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that was the same with Thunderball. I think we discussed that.
Oh, yeah, Thunderball. Thunderball has aged probably worse than any of them. But I didn't even think Thunderball was that great when I was a kid. Like, that was one I saw once and didn't even bother watching again.
I was in awe of it. I thought it was awesome, all the underwater action stuff. But as I grew older, I was like, I mean, stuff like You Only Live Twice I can watch over and over and over because I think it's fantastic.
Right.
But like Dr. No from Russia with Love with Me is like, oh, it's a snore fest. I can't watch
it. Dr. No, I think, is excellent up until you get to Dr. No's lair, and that's when it turns into a shitty episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, Yeah.
You know, like, with just, like, crappy sets, just boring action. But everything in Jamaica up to that point, I think, is gold. I love all of it.
Yeah.
And I can watch it just for that.
All right. Let me ask you something. How do you think a film like Highlander would hold up for you? Because I saw
it's on my list.
Oh, okay. There you go. Because I watched that not long ago, and I actually still enjoyed it. It's corny as shit.
I still enjoy Highlander. I will say that. I still enjoy it. It just hasn't aged well.
No, it hasn't.
I love the Queen soundtrack, but it's almost kind of like... it's one of those movies that's kind of bad, but I love it anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, for its time, it was, you know, very innovative visually. But
yep.
It just, you know, there's just a lot of the stuff about it. The dialogue, the action, it all is really hokey now.
Oh, that, and the special effects as well were just like,
oh yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, but the editing was magnificent at the time. Like, even, like, you know, some of the shots, like, he looks in the aquarium and the camera pans up and he's on the water with Christopher Lambert's on the water with Sean Connery. All that stuff is pretty cool.
But what you can tell when you watch this film is that it was actually shot by a guy who did music videos for a career before.
Oh, absolutely. Just like Fincher, you know. Russell Mulcahy was one of those guys who made really stylized movies.
Yeah.
That early on in his career. And Russell Mulcahy hasn't gone on to have the career Fincher has, but
no.
Fincher's later movies are more restrained, and I think they hold up better than stuff like Fight Club or Seven as a result.
Yeah, and the last best thing that Mulcahy did was The Shadow. That was it. That was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, and I liked the third Resident Evil movie, all right.
The third one. I hated it.
Oh, really? You hated it? I don't know. I'm a fan of the Resident Evil movies.
No, I like it. I own them all, but I actually like two more than I like three.
Really? Because I like three more than I like two.
That's what a lot of people say, actually. They hate two, but I enjoyed two more than three.
I don't, you know, when I first saw two, I hated it. When I went back and watched on video, I was like, yeah, it's all right. Whatevs.
Oh, it's not a masterpiece, but
it's not a masterpiece. But I was like, as a direct to video, like watching it on video at home, I was like, this is what it needs to be. It's fine.
Yeah, that's right.
It just, you know, but three had the more striking moments to me.
Yep. All right.
All right. So we just covered Highlander, so that's that one. And the next one, I still enjoy Tim Burton's Batman. It's not very good.
Yeah.
You know? And I can't even watch Batman Returns anymore. I just can't sit through it. It's too boring.
It always has been, though. I mean, I saw it in a theater once, and I was like, oh, it's okay. I mean, I own it because it came part of the quadrilogy of Batman in my Blu-ray set. You know, I didn't ever actively seek it. Oh, actually, did I own it on Laserdisc? I think I did. I think I owned it on Laserdisc before, you know, way back in the day. Only because it was one of those ones that had that big wow factor picture and sound at the time, and which it did. But I want to put one to you. Have you ever seen Warlock?
With the...
Julian Sands.
Yeah, Julian Sands. No, I haven't.
Okay, so that one, that didn't hold up. Again, I enjoyed it, but oh, God, it's aged terribly, it has.
Yeah, I think David Toohey wrote that, who went on to do John's favorite movies, Pitch Black and Riddick.
I think that sounds right, yeah. And it was directed by Steve Miner from the Friday the 13th series. I think part two he did. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, what else have you got?
Well, and I was going to say, too, to piggyback off Batman and Batman Returns, like, I can still watch Batman. I watched it recently, and I enjoyed watching it, even though it's kind of shitty.
Yeah.
I think most Tim Burton movies don't hold up, honestly. I think he's one of the most overrated Hollywood directors.
I disagree. I quite like Tim Burton as a filmmaker.
I don't like most of his movies. Like, I love Ed Wood. That's about it.
You didn't like Sleepy Hollow? I like Sleepy Hollow.
Okay, yeah, Sleepy Hollow's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sleepy Hollow's good. Because it kind of calls back to that sort of Hammer horror stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I don't like Edward Scissorhands. I don't like, Beetlejuice is all right.
Okay.
I don't like, you know, I hated Planet of the Apes. I hated, what's it called?
Don't say it. Dark Shadows. Dark Shadows was, Alice in Wonderland was crap. Dark Shadows was fantastic.
You know what? Dark Shadows is a guilty pleasure. I don't think it's a great movie, but I do enjoy watching
it. It's a hell of a lot of fun. I loved it.
I hate myself for liking it, but I like it.
Why? I thought it was...
I don't know.
It was a crap ton of
fun.
It has
Alice Cooper in it. I don't know.
Who cares?
No. I don't mean that. I don't mean I hate Alice Cooper.
Yeah, I know.
But I love Alice Cooper. He's a god. But, Chloe Grace Moretz, I can't stand her, but, whatever.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't know. Just Tim Burton, he just doesn't do anything for me. His style is just, I don't know, it's just overhyped, and there's like a formula to his films. But next one is another two for X-Men and X-Men 2. Brian?
X-Men 2, I'm with you. I was just bored stupid by that. X-Men 1, I still enjoy.
X-Men 1 just, it feels like a TV show to me.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a pilot.
Okay.
And John and I have talked about this multiple times on the show.
Yeah.
That those movies don't hold up. Like, X-Men 2 is often on the best superhero movies ever list.
No.
And it's, I don't know, I just think it's visually drab. It's just not that fun to watch. And I feel the same way about the first X-Men. The next one I have, I'm just going down the list here, is a newer movie that is in the IMDb top 250, very high up there, Christopher Nolan's Inception.
Oh, yeah, we've discussed this before in the past. I was never really that fond of it.
I don't know, it just, like, I don't think the action scenes in it pop. I think they're you can't really tell what's going on. I think the most of the movie is explaining the concept. And when you go back and rewatch it, the movie is insanely boring because of that. Because they spend so much time explaining how the dream logic works in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what did I say? I said it was pretentious.
And I think it's great that Christopher Nolan tried to make a really complex thriller, but when you spend so much of the movie with exposition, it just doesn't really work. It's one of the most overrated blockbusters recently.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to ask you something.
What's up?
How do you think a guy like Brian De Palma's early stuff holds up?
Still like a lot of his early stuff. Well, depends on what you mean by his early stuff.
Okay, let's say this stuff. Let's say late 70s through to the early 80s stuff. The Fury, stuff like Carrie.
I haven't watched The Fury in years, but I remember loving it. Carrie doesn't hold up that well.
No.
I mean, I can see why it was iconic at the time.
Yeah.
But okay. It's not that great, but I love Sisters.
Yeah.
I love Phantom of the Paradise.
See, there's one for me I don't like anymore.
Oh, I love Phantom of the Paradise. I saw it. I recently watched the Scream Factory Blu-ray, and I had a blast watching it.
Dude, they had the friggin' Arrow Blu-ray at one of my local stores here for $10. I just passed up. I was like, not interested.
Oh, wow.
Nah, not interested whatsoever.
But, I don't know. Stuff like Scarface doesn't really appeal to me anymore.
Yeah, I can see that.
Thought it was awesome when I was a teenager, but it just doesn't... It's not that I think it's bad. It just doesn't appeal to me anymore. I just have no desire to watch it.
I'll tell you one that was not done by him, but I liked it when I first discovered VHS tapes and I watched it. And now I just think it's an absolute piece of shit since I read the book, and that was Midnight Express. I think it's a garbage movie.
You know what? I haven't ever seen Midnight Express.
Oh, I watched the film on the VHS days, and I thought it was very good. Then I picked up the actual book by Billy Hayes, who was the actual guy in there, and the story in there is so different to the film. The film has a lot of embellishments in it, assist Oliver Stone's cocaine-induced script, and I can't wait. Ever since I read the book, I watched the movie, I go, this is just crap.
Well, story about a guy who gets imprisoned for smuggling drugs across a border. Well, that's what happens when you smuggle drugs across a border in a foreign land. You're going to be in a terrible, shitty foreign prison. That's what happens.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, their prisons are going to suck because you're not in America, and our prisons suck too.
I kind of wish they had read the book first before Stone wrote it up as a completely different tale altogether.
And Alan Parker, I really like some of Alan Parker's movies, but he has a tendency in some movies like that and Mississippi Burning. Well, I haven't seen Midnight Express, but from what I've heard about it, like when you watch Mississippi Burning, Southerners are portrayed as like cartoon freak, like racist, like psychos. And those people do exist, but he paints with this broad brush. And I've heard that's what he does with the Turkish in that movie.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And he just has this tendency to really dehumanize like entire groups of people. And and I've heard Midnight Express is a similar example to Mississippi Burning.
Mm, yeah, I've seen both, and I actually thought Midnight Express was better. Mississippi Burning was better.
Yeah.
But like I said, how much fact is thrown into that actual film? Who knows?
That's a movie that it's fun to get John going on.
Yeah. Another one I had was one I just finished watching last night, which is The Exorcist 3. It was slow. I remember it being a lot more quicker pace than what it was, but poor man, it was slow as hell.
Well, like, it has some really... the parts I remember are the really scary parts, like the nurse with the giant scissors and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that scene, like, made me fucking, like, jump on the ceiling.
Yeah, there's some good moments in there. I mean, I'm not going to deny that, but...
But, you know, that's a movie that really got fucked with. William Peter Blatty was sort of recut on it a lot by the studio.
Yeah.
Like, they made him put in the exorcism scene at the end, which really felt out of place.
It did, didn't it? There was no need for it whatsoever.
Yeah, it just didn't need to be there, but James Jax, or whoever the guy was, insisted that there be an exorcism scene.
In all honesty, you could have just called that film Legion and had nothing to do with
Exorcist
3.
That's the book it was based on. It was based on Blatty's book Legion.
That's right, but as in not put the title there of Exorcist 3 Legion. Why not just have a film called Legion?
I think it was supposed to be called Legion, but it was changed for marketing purposes. Because Legion did feature characters from The Exorcist, so
they just
wanted to put asses in seats, even though Exorcist 2 was a complete dud.
Yeah, I mean, you really could have changed the kingdom and character to another guy altogether. It wouldn't have made a difference, really.
No.
You know, it was very thinly tied up with The Exorcist, so I just thought it was, superfluous, really. It could have stood alone as its own film, Legion, and not had the bloody stupid exorcism scene at the end. I did like George C. Scott a lot there, though.
He's great, yeah.
But, how many times has he ever put in a bad performance? Hardly ever. Mm. Another film for me that did not hold up was 8mm. I thought it was just...
I've never seen it.
Yeah, I thought it was fucking harrowing when I first watched it.
That's one that gets recommended to me a lot. People go, "Oh, you got to see 8mm," but I just haven't seen it.
Yeah, that would be a lot of Nicolas Cage movies don't really hold up. I still enjoy Honeymoon in Vegas though, so I do like that quite a bit.
What about Leaving Las Vegas?
No, I thought it was well done, but it was just dismal from the start,
it's a tough movie to sit through.
Oh yeah, it's not easy.
But I think it's a better depiction of alcoholism than Lost Weekend, but it's still pretty cartoonish.
Yeah,
I don't understand how a guy who's dying in his deathbed of liver failure could have sex with Elizabeth Shue. Like, I don't know how that's possible.
That's true. How do you think things like The Matrix would have held up? 15 years on.
I went back and watched The Matrix a few years ago, and I still thought it was pretty good. The sequels are shit, but I remember even enjoying the first one when I went back and watched it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you one, actually. I'm probably going to cover a ton of shit for the original Superman with Christopher Reeve.
That one, I think there are parts of it that don't hold up very well.
Nah.
You know, and we've talked about this on the show, I think, with John, like, all this stuff with Lex Luthor and his plan, it just doesn't make any sense. But I think the movie's really strong from the beginning to, I think, when Lex shows up. I think that's when it starts to go off the rails a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, from the list that I've got, looks like I'm just about out of them.
I've got a few more.
Okay, let's hear.
Kill Bill 1 and 2.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
I mean, I fucking loved Kill Bill when I saw them in the theater. I thought that they were such kick-ass movies. But having gone, like, watched a lot of Tarantino's movies, watching a lot of Kung Fu movies, going back and watching it, it just doesn't do anything for me anymore. Okay. I don't know if it's just becoming more well-versed in cinema, but, like, I think a lot of Tarantino's sort of DJ mashups that he does of genre.
Yep.
Like, Kill Bill is one of the most extreme of those, but a lot of times when he's mashing stuff up, he makes a statement, or he's making some commentary on the genre.
Yeah.
And I don't think Kill Bill does that, and it just seems to be, like, chicks kicking ass. I don't know. It just, when I go back and watch it, it just bores me to death.
It's just a real excuse for him to put Uma Thurman in some tights.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. It just doesn't do anything for me when I go back and watch it. Like, I like Death Proof more than Kill Bill 1 and 2.
Ah, which kind of Death Proof? You like the one on Grindhouse or the actual extended?
Either or.
Yeah. No, I like the one on Grindhouse. I'm not fond of the extended.
The extended one, I don't watch any. I saw it once. Now I just watch the Grindhouse version.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. You know, I don't need to see the missing reel. It doesn't.
No, I don't need the fucking lap dance. No. I don't need it.
No.
I don't want it.
No.
But, oh, God. Okay. Next one I have is Green Mile.
Oh, yeah. I've only seen it once. That was enough for me.
You know, I think it's a Frank Darabont prison movie. People like it because they like Shawshank. But, you know, the late Michael Clark Duncan, he plays the magical black man that's just such a tired archetype in cinema.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels like sub-Spielberg, you know, saccharine shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it's really a beloved movie, but it's, I think audiences love it, but.
Okay.
This next one is probably the most beloved movie on this list, and I don't know why, but it just rubs me the wrong way.
Mm.
I know it's prophetic. I know it says a lot about media and culture and society. And I will concede that it is a very well-written movie.
Yeah.
Something about it pisses me off whenever I watch it, and I just don't like watching it, and that's Network.
Oh, see, that's ages ago since I saw that at the theater, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I saw it as a revival theater. I saw Network on that big screen.
I thought you meant when it came out. I was like, holy shit.
No, it wasn't that. I was like 5 when it came out, I think. Yeah. No. That was back in the 2000s sometime I saw it.
You know, and I know that's where I lose all credibility. Hunter doesn't like Network, but...
Oh, well.
I don't know. It just doesn't... I don't know what it is. It's just...
Yeah.
I don't know. But,
How do you think a film like, say, King of Comedy holds up?
I love King of Comedy.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
Love it. Went back and watched it recently. Not, you know, about less than a year ago for the show, and I thought it was great.
Okay.
But I don't know. I think that movie's more interesting than Network in terms of media.
Oh, yeah.
That stuff. I don't know. There's just something about Network. It's like the movie personification of the guy on the street corner saying the end is nigh, blacks are coming, Jews are coming.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just something. It's like a movie that feels like a cinema version of Alex Jones. I don't know. Even though I understand that it says a lot, and it has a lot to do, and, you know, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take any more. It's all great. I'm not saying it's not, like, a quote-unquote good movie. It's just one that doesn't hold up for me. I don't know. It's just... Maybe I'll have to re-articulate when I'm more processed, but I was just like, man, that's one that doesn't work for me. Okay. And I'll go... You know, before I dig myself into a bigger hole, I'm just going to go after another beloved movie, and this is my last one. And it's one I think I'm well on record for hating, and that's Pan's Labyrinth.
Ah, okay.
I saw that in the theater. I thought it was great when I saw it in the theater. Back then, I was a Kool-Aid drinking Del Toro fan until he just started to bother me.
So, what don't you like about it? You don't like the film, or you don't like him?
No, I don't like the film. When I say something about him, I meant something about his movies.
Okay.
I went back and watched it, and it just felt like an ugly, mean-spirited movie that just had this, like, oh, the world is ugly, we only have our imaginations, and these communist people who are just as evil as the fascists are these magical creatures of the forest. And we can't get into the store. John brought this up. We can't get into the store shed, even though we have guns. We need to get a key.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a movie that bothers me. Just like a lot of Del Toro's work bothers me. I like a couple of his movies, but, well, yeah, three of them, I think.
Oh, I'll only go it with a bang and upset all the horror crowd there and say,
oh, Jesus Christ.
Halloween 2.
I think a lot of people agree that Halloween 2 is not very good. I rewatched it. I watched the TV version the other night.
Yeah.
And it was nice to watch Halloween 2 different, but it still sucked.
Yeah.
Halloween 2 is not very good. It's Halloween, but succumbing to the slasher conventions.
Yeah, because I did bring up earlier throughout the show with John that I was not fond of Halloween H2O. Even though I saw it at the drive-in back in 98 when it hit on Christmas Day, as you guys would have heard before. And watched it again, wasn't fond of it. And same goes to Halloween 2 as well. Just, it's okay, let's say that. It's got a shitload of inconsistency, though.
If I'm doing Halloween, like if I'm watching all the movies, I'll watch it. But it's, you know, when you come off of watching Halloween, which I rewatched the other day, and it holds up so well.
Yeah.
And you watch Halloween 2, and it's just like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a turd in the punch bowl.
I'll tell you one set of films that hold up very well, and always will, and that's the Elvis movies. So get stuffed a lot of years if you don't like them.
Viva Las Vegas, baby.
Absolutely. our favorite, Stay Away Joe.
Stay away, Joe!
Charo, I mean, a lot more.
Flaming Star.
Flaming Star is actually one of my favorites.
Don Siegel directed it.
That's, there you go. You know, even Kissing Cousins.
Yeah.
Did you know Jerry Lee Lewis did a sequel to Kissing Cousins?
No, he didn't.
Yeah, and that was called I'm Fucking My Cousin, that's right.
I didn't even feel the pitch coming on that one. I was like, I thought you were trying to be serious. God damn, that was good.
But no, I'll never get tired of those Elvis films.
Elvis films are great. You know, they get a lot of shit, but they're good fucking popcorn.
They remind me of growing up and watching on a Saturday afternoon about 1, 2 o'clock on television, Elvis films or Jerry Lewis films, his early stuff. That was the stuff I was raised on.
Like a lot of these movies, sometimes they're movies that don't hold up.
Yeah.
But there are some movies that don't necessarily hold up as quote-unquote great movies, but they remind you of times in your life, kind of like a song.
Exactly. You know,
I hear certain songs and they remind me of formative times in my life, and there are movies that do that, and if a movie does that, then goddamn, more power to it, you know?
Exactly. Like, I watched Kiss Attack of the Phantoms upstairs on the big screen, and yeah, it wasn't great, but I still had a lot of fun with it. I mean, I still sat through it in one sitting without a problem.
You could look at Gene Simmons and not go into a rage.
Or go turn my back and face the wall. Yeah, no, I've grown up from that, I think. But all right, I think we've pretty much run the well dry on this one.
Right, I can't wait to hear John's rantings on the previous segment.
Yeah, as you guys would have worked out, this was done over 2 days, stitched together Frankenstein style into one show.
I couldn't make it last night. John couldn't make it tonight, so we...
John's out watching Shonen Knife today. He's gone to see him in... So everyone join in the chorus of banana chips, banana chips. Come on, banana chips. Oh, my
banana
God.
Banana chips.
I saw them live years ago. I was telling John. I was like, God, they're like a novelty act. They're god-awful. Yes. But anyway, next week episode, we actually know what we're doing with ourselves. All planned.
Yes. Yes, we're planned. We have a plan.
Yes.
Got a guy back on the show, too, right?
Got a, yeah, very, very popular guest coming back.
Right. Tyler Perry and Barack Obama aren't safe. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, you guys know who it is. Yeah, Garrow's back next week with us. And give you a heads up what we're doing. We are talking the the absolute pile of crap that is The Exorcist 2, and that's going to make one hell of a fucking
discussion. I can't wait, because I've never seen it.
Neither has Garrow, he said. He's never seen it either.
So this is going to be a new experience for me. So, yeah, I've read about it. I've seen clips from it, but I've never sat through the movie, so I'm looking forward to... It gives me an excuse to watch it, you know?
You got 118 minutes of crap in front of your way shortly. It is...
How many minutes?
118.
Oh, I thought you said 180.
No.
Fuck me.
Oh, it's gonna feel that long. It's gonna feel longer than that.
Okay.
It is bad. So, yeah, Exorcist 2, which I'm sure will generate a lot of conversation... If you guys haven't seen it, suggest go and watch it within the next week to keep up with us, or listen to the show, then go watch it if you guys haven't seen it.
I have a quick announcement to make. For listeners who've been listening for a while, you may remember a guy named Andrew Farmer was on the show a lot. Mm-hmm. Hasn't been on the show in a while, but he has a podcast called Hey Kids Comics. And I was just on there the other day talking about Judge Dredd with him and another guy who's been on our show, Cole Houston, Jedi Cole.
Cole hasn't even been on any longer than Andrew. Cole was like episode 5 or something. He was with us.
Cole hasn't been on since like episode 4.
Was it? No, it was 4 or 5. It was one of those.
So
I can't remember which one it was. Yeah. Back in the end of 2010.
But yeah, look up Hey Kids Comics, and the episode should be dropping soon. I did plug this episode in it, and I was hoping it would be out before this one, but alas, oops. So if you listen to it and you hear me talking about, say, tell us your movies that don't hold up, just ignore that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, all right, so that's it from us. Like I said, next week, Exorcist 2 with Garrow. And, oh, God, that's going to be fun.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. Okay, folks.
Be sure to shoot us an email at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com and tell me why I'm an idiot for not liking Network.
Yes, that's right. Or anything else that you've heard in this show that you don't agree with, choose an email. Get us on social media somewhere, Facebook, Twitter.
At MMCowboys on Twitter. Tell me what a fucking idiot I am.
Yeah.
I understand.
Join along with us who do it as well to Hannah. Calling him a fucking idiot. All right. And also, donations, please. Some more would be very, very lovely to help the brothers out here.
Yeah, we got some costs we got to cover.
Hell yes, we do. All right. Okay, till next week, folks. Sign off, Hannah.
Adios.
Yeah, mahalo.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week. Okay, so yeah, like I said, John's here the first half, and Hunter here later on. He's been diagnosed apparently with Ebola, so we've just told him to fuck off till he's been cleared and got the okay.
He is in Dallas after all.
Exactly, yeah. That's what he gets for having sex with Nina Pham or whatever it was. Oh, God.